This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up, has our nation's intelligence community gone rogue? Many on Capitol Hill are increasingly concerned. Texas Congressman Ted Poe, who serves on House committees with oversight of some of our intel agencies, joins me in just a moment. Also, Alabama Senator Luther Strange has introduced a measure this week that will help fund the wall on our southern border. It's actually a pretty novel approach. He'll tell us about it a little later here on Washington Watch. And another tragic ending for a transgendered girl whose Christian parents gave their daughter the support to become a boy. In the end, it wasn't enough for the 13-year-old, and she took her own life. Peter Sprigg joins me to address the high rate of suicide among LGBTQ teens. Is it an issue of external affirmation, or is it more of an issue of internal dissonance? We'll talk about it here on Washington Watch. The website is TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything on your way home, well, you can catch it all later. It's all archived at TonyPerkins.com. By the way, we still have a few spots available if you want to go with us to Alaska, the end of July, 1st of August. You can find more information. Again, we just have a few spots left, but we'd love to have you. We'll have General Jerry Boykin, Ambassador Ken Blackwell, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, myself. We'll have a great time. Again, find out more. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T. Perkins. All right, lots of activity and intrigue in Washington and high drama on Capitol Hill. The Justice Department announced charges Monday against a federal contractor, Reality Leah Winner, she has a top secret security clearance, and she was arrested after she allegedly leaked classified information to an online media outlet. And today, top U.S. intelligence and law enforcement officials were on Capitol Hill to testify before a Senate hearing on federal surveillance and wiretapping authority. And, of course, tomorrow, the former FBI director will be on Capitol Hill. But for today's hearing, there's growing concern among a number of Republicans about the leaks and the surveillance that is taking place of Americans. And one of those concerned congressmen is Ted Poe, former Texas state judge who serves on the Foreign Affairs Committee, the Judiciary Committee, and the chairman of the Subcommittee on Terrorism, Nuclear Proliferation, and Trade, and a frequent guest. Congressman Poe, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Always good to talk to you, Tony.
I read with interest your comments, among others who are expressing concern about whether or not we have a serious problem in our intel agencies that are tracking information on United States citizens, which is illegal.
Yes, it is illegal, and we do have a problem, and we're learning more about it constantly. Here's where it is taking place, in my opinion, Tony. There is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which allows government to seize information of foreign terrorists. But what happens is, while the government sees the information of a foreign terrorist, this is without a Fourth Amendment protection.
Right.
It's really administrative order done by the FISA court. These are secret courts that issue secret warrants, which is a different issue completely. I got concerned about that. But anyway, they issue a warrant to go seize foreign terrorist information, like a phone call or an email, to someone in the U.S. But what happens is they seize the information, also it's called incidental information, mm-hmm. of the American in the United States, and then later use that information against that American. Not necessarily right away, but they store the information forever. And then they can go back in the information and then find things that they don't, that may be criminal, and then prosecute the American. The problem is they seize that information on the American without a Fourth Amendment warrant. And that is the problem. You know, if you have information on an American, seize the information based on the Fourth Amendment, get a search warrant by a judge, not a secret judge, and go after them. But they're seizing the information based upon the original administrative warrant and use that against the American. That is illegal. The law does not allow for that right now, but it is being done. And we're learning more and more about that being done against Americans. And so that reauthorization of that provision of the FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, is coming up for renewal at the end of this year, and this is has to be addressed and fixed, or I'm not going to vote for reauthorizing FISA because, Fourth Amendment is yet sacred to this country and sacred to Americans. The right of privacy is sacred to us, and the federal government cannot be making these unlawful searches of American emails, content, like the conversation, and without a valid warrant. So that's where we are on this issue.
Well, Congressman Poe, I think this is a great educational moment for the American public. Now, I remember in the wake of 9/11, we had the Patriot Act, and many of the states followed with their own version of the Patriot Act, and I was in office back then, and I was the only Republican who opposed it. Because we all want America to be safe, and look, I'm a security guy. I'm a Marine. I was a police officer. I get that. I worked in anti-terrorism. But I also know enough about government to know that it cannot be any better than the people in government. And therefore, we have to have these safeguards, and the founders understood that. That's why we have the Bill of Rights. That's why the Fourth Amendment is so critical. Now, as you pointed out, this could be criminal, but we still have safeguards, and we cannot just dismiss those safeguards because of what we want to accomplish in the end. And I think that's important for Americans to understand.
That's well said, Tony. Well said. And that's exactly, we need to remember the basics. The amendments, Bill of Rights, were to protect us from government's intrusion into our lives, whether it was free speech, or whether it was the right to practice our own religion, or whether it is to be safe and secure in our houses and papers without having a search warrant, you're safe. And so, and that's what I think it's being abused. Like I said, this is the law, as it's written, is already being abused. And we want to, many of us who, like you, believe in security and protecting our liberties, we want to see this change and make sure it does not occur. And if we cannot change this, then we're not going to vote to authorize the government to snoop on individuals in any way under this bill.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Wednesday afternoon. My guest, Congressman Ted Poe of Texas, serves on the Judiciary Committee, actually on committees that has oversight of various intel agencies. You made a comment about the NSA, National Security Agency, and it overreaching its authority. And you said this, and I'm quoting from a news article, "Nothing would surprise me about what the NSA does. Unfortunately, they cannot be trusted." Did you say that?
Well, I said that.
And you believe that?
I believe that. The NSA has abused its authority. And where I say they cannot be trusted is they're snooping around on Americans. And it's not under just this provision of the FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. It's under other acts where we have found that the NSA has gone too broad in seizing. We all heard about the NSA seizing metadata, and in that metadata was information that they could not seize except by the general warrant. What that means is they get a warrant. It'd be similar for me as a judge issuing a search warrant for an entire zip code. Law enforcement would come to me and say, "Judge Poe, we know there's this outlaw. He lives in this zip code, but we don't know where he lives. So give us a warrant to go search every house in the zip code." Well, I wouldn't do that. No judge would. What NSA is doing is they are collecting metadata, and they are searching all of that metadata for that one needle in the haystack without a valid search warrant. They got caught doing that. Now it's moved over to another part of the law, the 702 reauthorization under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act that we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Government will push the envelope as far as they can and get away with it when it comes to the ability to search. And that's why the secret searches that being done, I think that would not surprise me what they come up with and what they do under violation of current law. That's my opinion.
Well, knowing what I know about you, former state judge, law and order guy, good solid conservative, when I see these comments from you, my concern grows because I was already concerned. I respect my government, but I don't always trust it. I think that's why we have our system set up, so the people know what's going on. When you have these secret courts and you give authority, it's got to be watched very carefully, and that's part of what Congress does. And so when those who are in the know that have more knowledge than I do because they have the benefit of intelligence briefings, then I'm concerned when those are expressed. So how do we fix this? Because clearly we've got a problem with this stuff being leaked out, damaging to different individuals. I think it's hindering the administration. How do we fix this?
Well, that you just mentioned a separate issue. The information being leaked from classified sources. General rule of law is if a person leaks classified information, gives that to some other entity, that's a crime. That's a felony. Now, there are exceptions to that, but that's the general rule. And these leaks that are coming out of the White House of classified information, to me, those people not only need to be fired, they need to be prosecuted if the information is truly classified. How we do this is Congress has the responsibility to rein in the abuses. Under that last situation, those people need to be prosecuted. Under the situation where NSA or other government agencies may leak information or gather information without benefit of lawful warrants, we need to change the law. We need to change the law so if it's clear to them they cannot do that.
I have a hunch, just my hunch, that all of this is somewhat interconnected. I think that we're seeing the problems are becoming more pronounced because I think this information is being used and utilized in a way that's, I think, trying to undermine this administration and even the Congress, the conservative Congress. So I hope that now that there's more voices speaking out on this, this is something that we can see reformed so that the American people can once again have trust in their government and we can have proper intelligence that can help keep America safe.
Couldn't agree with you more. And it's our responsibility as members of Congress to make sure that the Bill of Rights are protected legislatively. And I think we're going to do that on the situations that I just mentioned to you. We're really moving in that direction at a good speed.
Well, and I fully trust you and a number of your colleagues to do that, and I appreciate your diligence, and we'll continue to watch, and I'm sure we're going to get you back on to talk more about this in the days ahead.
All right, Tony. Thank you very much.
All right, Ted. Great to talk with you. Ted Poe, Congressman of Texas. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, Senator from Alabama, Senator Strange, has a novel way to fund the wall on our southern border. He's going to be here to talk about it when we return. Don't go away.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. What we place before our eyes does impact. In my youth, I recall too well the impact that nasty pictures had on me when addicted to pornography. Images take hold and can lead to worsening images and actions. So it is that it both saddens and disgusts me when I see the hardness of heart and soul that Kathy Griffin revealed in her display and mockery of the bloody depiction of the beheading of the president. Such acts, such images displayed before a watching world dangerously gives license and sets precedents for others that potentially opens the floodgates for not only imagery, but thoughts, societal incivility, and even actions. Father God, pour out your mercy once again upon us, your people, that we would detest such evil and hunger and thirst for righteousness for all mankind. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country, our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, President Trump has consistently made clear that securing America's border is one of his highest priorities. I mean, you heard it all throughout the campaign. He's continued to talk about it. For over a decade, Congress has promised the American people a secure border, but it hasn't happened. You know, and I've talked about this a number of times. I welcome immigrants into this country who come here legally, but a country without borders is not a country. Well, Senator Luther Strange of Alabama, who was appointed to the seat vacated by our good friend Jeff Sessions, who is now the U.S. Attorney General, has what I think a novel way to partially fund the wall on our southern border. Senator Strange joins us now. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's great to be with you.
Well, first-time guest, and I'm glad to have you on. And I was reading this proposal you had, and as a former state legislator, when I saw how the federal government used to, you know, tell us what we had to do with funds, I thought this was very interesting, and I wanted you to share that with our listeners, how you are proposing that we pay for a portion of the southern wall, the border on our, the wall on our southern border.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. I kind of view it as a common sense approach, which I know is lacking in Washington sometimes, to restore respect for the rule of law, which I care very much about as a former attorney general in our state of Alabama, and in addition, keep our citizens safe. So in a nutshell, when sanctuary cities, which we know exist around the country, ignore our federal authorities, law enforcement, et cetera, or when they attempt to blacklist their own small businessmen and women who are bidding on border wall contracts, which, as you pointed out, the law is seeking bids to construct the wall the president's promised to build. My bill will simply take federal transportation grants that would have gone to those sanctuary city jurisdictions and redirect them to fund the border wall. It's very simple, and it really is based, as I said, on the rule of law in this country.
Yeah, this is these. There's about 100 of these sanctuary cities and counties around the country where they basically say, we're not going to enforce the federal law when it comes to immigration. This is, we're a sanctuary, which, as you say, it's violating the federal law. It's also endangering the citizens. And some would say, well, this is a heavy-handed approach. The federal government shouldn't be telling local governments what they have to do and not giving them money that's due them. But this is the way Washington operates, is it not?
Well, I don't think it's heavy-handed, honestly. I just don't see why American taxpayers who are law-abiding should be expected to send their hard-earned money to jurisdictions in this country who simply want to ignore the law. There's a way in our great system of democracy to change the law if you don't like it. But in the area of immigration, as you know, we know, and we've litigated this in the courts, that is one of the constitutional responsibilities of the federal government. We don't have a separate immigration system for every town, village, and state in our country. And we expect people to abide by the law, and we know what's happened when they don't. This is simply a refusal to follow the law. It just seems eminently reasonable to me to say, if you're not willing to follow the American legal system here in this area, then we're going to use that money to fund the wall, and you won't get it.
And by the way, on the issue of immigration, even the courts, for the most part now, we're seeing them mm-hmm. blocking the president's executive orders. But for the most part, even the courts have been deferential to the Congress when it comes to the issue of immigration and the administration, because they understand it's clear that this is the role of the federal government. Now, I haven't looked at this, but I would not be surprised that many of these sanctuary cities get a disproportionate percentage of transportation funds that come back based upon what they send to Washington. They get a higher percentage coming back. This is something that the federal government has long done. If you don't, if you didn't have a seatbelt law in the state, you wouldn't get transportation dollars. If you didn't raise the drinking age, you wouldn't get transportation dollars. If you wouldn't raise the speed limit or lower the speed limit, you wouldn't get transportation dollars. So this is something that's very common in terms of these federal dollars and how the federal government, you know, seeks compliance with what they feel is in the best interest of public safety. But here you've got a specific federal law. So I would say the case is even stronger that you have a federal law that's being intentionally violated.
I agree, Tony. This is a clear violation of the law, and it's very similar to you mentioned our friend and his my dear friend Jeff Sessions, our attorney general. You know, he has gone about actually enforcing the laws that are on the books, which I know sounds like a novel theory sometimes to some people. But
well, it has in the last 8 years.
It is totally in the last 8 years. As someone who sued the Obama administration many times on behalf of defending the Constitution, I can tell you that. But because he is enforcing the law, you know, illegal border crossings are down almost 40%. But more than that, I love the tool that General Sessions is employing, and that's in the law enforcement grant area. You know,
right.
We send law enforcement grant funds to cities to help assist with law enforcement. But we expect, and the law requires, cooperation and assistance. That's a fundamental principle of law enforcement between state and federal authorities. And the sanctuary cities, the same ones we're talking about, have said, look, we're not going to enforce the immigration laws. We don't care what the federal law says. And Jeff has rightly said, well, then we're not going to send you a law enforcement grant if you're going to refuse to abide by its terms. You're just disobeying the law. So I think that's an effective tool, and I hope that it will encourage these communities to actually follow the law of this country.
Well, Senator Strange, what are the prospects of you getting a vote on your bill in the Senate?
Well, it's very difficult to predict action in the Senate these days, Tony. We don't seem to be moving as quickly as I'd like to see us move. However, when I explain this situation to my colleagues, they're just aghast that there are communities that would say, actually punish or blacklist their businessmen and women for even bidding on or participating in the construction of the border wall. That just seems un-American at its core, and that's the kind of penalties we are being posed here that we're aiming at. So when people hear about it, they say, this just can't be right. We should do something about it. So we're picking up some support, and I'm going to continue to push this because, as you said at the top of this interview, the president promised to do this. He's doing something that should be applauded, which is fulfilling his promises, particularly in this area, and we need to do everything we can to help him do it.
Well, we look forward to watching you make progress on this, and I'm sure we'll talk with you again about it. Senator Luther Strange, thanks so much for being with us.
Many thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a great afternoon. Senator Luther Strange of Alabama. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right. When we come back, a very, very sad story of a transgendered girl whose Christian parents gave their daughter the support to become a boy. In the end, it wasn't enough for the 13-year-old, and she took her own life. Peter Sprigg joins me to address the high rate of suicide among LGBTQ teens. Is it an issue of external affirmation or more of an issue of internal dissonance? We're going to talk about it here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, there's a lot going on in the markets, and the markets are concerned right now about Thursday. Why? Well, we've got testimony starting with James Comey. That is weighing on the markets. UK general election. I don't think that's a lot to worry about there, but nonetheless. And the European Central Bank meeting. I can't imagine the EU Central Bank is going to make any changes to interest rates or anything else. As a matter of fact, I know they want them to get rid of the negative interest rates, but the fact of the matter is, inflation in the EU, or I should say deflation, looks like it's starting to come back a little bit. So that should be of some concern. So we'll have to wait and see. But everybody is very concerned about the markets headed towards the end of the week. The OECD, that is the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, that is the Paris think tank that puts out economic data globally, has indicated that they are downgrading growth for the U.S. for 2017 and 2018. The OECD expects U.S. growth this year to be at 2.1%. I think it's going to be higher than that. I think they should have stuck to their original 2.4% forecast. They also say 2018 is going to be about 2.4% from 2.8%. All of this based on the fact that a lot of the Trump administration agenda items like tax reform might not happen. Well, it might happen and certainly will happen for next year. So I don't think that's going to be very accurate. They also downgraded global growth as well. So we'll watch that, but I think there's still a possibility, slight as it might be, that we could get tax reform maybe even this year.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right. You know, one of the things we've heard a lot over the last decade, when you look at the high rate of suicide, and this is tragic, it's a high rate of suicide of LGBTQ teens. Now, oftentimes it is pointed to bullying, and some of that takes place. I mean, no question. And it's wrong. I don't care what the case is. You know, kids are bullied for all different reasons. I mean, kids are, you know, well, human beings. I mean, we're fallen creatures, and we do bad things, and bullying is a bad thing. And we should do everything we can to stop it and encourage our kids not to do it. And I've had those conversations with my kids about, you know, let's actually come alongside and help those who are being shunned by their peers and made fun of for whatever reason. Doesn't matter what the reason is. But we're often told that, you know, we just have to affirm, you know, gay, lesbian, transgender, questioning youth, and if they're affirmed, all of this internal conflict will go away. And there was a case in Alabama of a self-professed Christian family, mother and father, who embraced their daughter transitioning to a boy in sixth grade. But at 13 years old, just recently, she committed suicide. So is this an issue of a lack of external affirmation, or is it really an issue of internal dissonance taking place? Join me now to talk about this, Peter Sprigg, who is on the FRC team, Senior Fellow for Policy Studies at the Family Research Council. Peter, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Now, Peter, I know you've written extensively on this. You've testified. In fact, you were testifying yesterday in Boston? Were you in Boston yesterday?
In Boston, yes.
Mm-hmm. Testifying regarding efforts to try to prohibit licensed counselors from providing minors with help to overcome coming unwanted sexual attractions. And this is a growing problem where we hear this thing about we just have to affirm them and who they are and what they want to be. But the evidence doesn't suggest that that will solve the problem.
That's correct. And I mean, this is the real bottom line issue. I think that, we have obviously concerns in principle with affirming something that we think is unnatural, it's contrary to the order of nature, and so forth. But the But the advocates, the LGBT activists, would have a stronger argument if they could point to convincing evidence showing that when people are affirmed and celebrated in these alternative lifestyles that they choose to engage in, that actually then their problems go away and they're happy and healthy and don't have the kind of mental health issues in particular that tend to be very highly correlated with the practice of homosexual conduct and of transgender conduct. But the evidence just doesn't support that. It doesn't show that the practice of affirmation actually is effective in removing the underlying mental health issues. And so that's what this story, as you said, a very tragic story. And we feel terribly for this young girl and for her parents. But it's quite clear from the extensive interview that was published online in AL.com in Alabama that they did everything they could to be affirming of her in this transition. And the school that this child attended did everything right. possible to be affirming.
The mother even praised the school for being, you know, affirming of
exactly,
their daughter.
Exactly. And yet, it still had this tragic outcome. So I think we need to, and the article, the mother acknowledged that this child had battled depression and anxiety, had been under the care of a psychologist and a psychiatrist, and was receiving medication. So there were serious issues here, quite apart from how she was treated as a transgender person.
Okay, Peter, you made reference to the evidence that suggests that the external affirmation does not solve the problem. And you know we're going to be up against a break, so I'm going to ask you to hold over when we come to that break point. But I want you to lay out, what is that evidence? What would show us that what their claims are simply not true?
Well, one of the most compelling research papers that's been published on this issue came out in Sweden. It was published a study done in Sweden in 2011, I think was the year. And they have a mass. First of all, Sweden is an extraordinarily liberal country. So there's not going to be much anti-LGBT sentiment in Sweden. That's what's going to be stigmatized in Sweden is opposition to this. And secondly, they're a very they're sort of a socialist country with a massive government bureaucracy, and so they tracked every single person in the country of Sweden over a long period of time who underwent sex reassignment surgery. Now, these are people who. So these are people not just who transitioned socially, but who actually did the full process of having surgery to alter their bodies to conform with their vision of themselves. And yet,
okay,
these
Peter,
people,
Peter, we're up against a break.
Oh,
so we got to transition to a break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to finish this conversation because I want people to hear fully that there is evidence that makes very clear that this is not something about, that is driving this external lack of affirmation. So we're going to talk about that. So stand by there, Peter. We're going to come back right
okay.
after this break. And folks, don't go away because this is an important discussion. I want you to hear the rest of it. Don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this.
A boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with American Family Association and American Family Radio. That is a highlight of our tour of the Holy Land when we go on the boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. A special time to be on the very water where Jesus walked, where he spent time with his disciples. And you know, in fact, you're the place where Jesus was. So many sites we're going to see in the Holy Land that are just like that. We know Jesus was here. The trip is in March 8th through the 16th, and we'd love for you to come with us. So many places we're going to see you've read about since you were a child. For more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. If you want a brochure sent to you in the mail, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, FAMILIES, extension 5.
Join Frank Turek, Richard Land, Norman Geisler, Greg Kokel, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Early bird pricing ends August 1st. Visit ses.edu for details.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
So what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your health care, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other health care plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
All right, folks, this is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, and we're glad to have you along. All right, Peter Sprigg, Senior Fellow for Policy Studies here at the Family Research Council with me. Yesterday was in Boston testifying before the Joint Committee on Children, Families, and Persons with Disabilities regarding two bills prohibiting licensed counselors from providing minors with help to overcome unwanted same-sex attractions. Now, this is what's happening. Is that we're increasingly seeing help being denied to children and even parents. I mean, the parents could want this and they can't get it, to help their children deal with same-sex attractions and also this issue of transgendering youth. And we were talking before the break about a young girl, 13-year-old girl, who had transitioned or was transitioning to a boy. Came out at the age of 16, and I'm sorry, in the sixth grade, and it is a tragedy. She took her life. Now, what we were discussing is that we hear from the activist who, I'm just going to say it, they want to lock kids into this. That's why they don't want them to get counseling. They don't want their parents to be able to get them counseling. They want to lock this in. And then they claim that it's because they're not affirmed that there's this internal conflict that leads to a higher rate of drug abuse, mental disorders, and suicide. And so that's what we're discussing with Peter. Peter, thanks for sticking around.
Oh, no problem.
Now, you were discussing the evidence, so continue on with what you were saying before the break.
Well, I was mentioning there's this one very significant study that looked at every single person in the country of Sweden who had undergone sex reassignment surgery for a period of time. And I think there were over 300 subjects in this study. And they found that the suicide rate in this population was 19 times higher than in the general population. Not 19% higher, 19 times higher rate of completed suicide. And that's just shocking. And this is among people who had had the full medical transition that is often, you know, wished for by transgender people in a country that is overwhelmingly supportive of LGBT issues. So to me, that's very definitive evidence that simply affirming transgender people in their transition is not going to make their serious mental health issues go away.
And this is not just you know, some of the academics that are saying this, but the medical professionals, American College of Pediatricians, point out that, quote, and I'm quoting from them, when an otherwise healthy biological boy believes he is a girl, or an otherwise healthy biological girl believes she is a boy, an objective psychological problem exists that lies in the mind, not the body, and it should be treated as such. These children suffer from gender dysphoria, and it was formerly listed as a gender identity disorder, and is recognized as a mental disorder in the most recent edition of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association. Now, so this is a problem that medical experts recognize, but we have activists who are saying something different.
Well, that's right. And, you know, you mentioned the hearing yesterday in Boston where I testified against a bill or a set of bills in the House and Senate that would prohibit therapy that is designed to help minors with unwanted same-sex attractions overcome those attractions or abstain from homosexual conduct and so forth, and also to prevent them from providing counseling to help people with gender dysphoria to be comfortable with their biological sex rather than helping them to undergo a social transition if that's what they express a preference for. And I find it very ironic that you have the situation where if a minor is uncomfortable with their biological sex, which of course is written in the anatomy of their body and in the chromosomes of every cell of their body from the moment of conception.
Virtually. Isn't that science?
You would think that that would be science. That would be fairly
yes.
definitive. But if they are uncomfortable with their biological sex, then we are supposed to counsel them to that they can abandon their biological sex and that, you know, that they can adopt an entirely different gender identity.
And we're counseling them to deny reality.
Exactly. And yet, if a person has same-sex sexual attractions, a subjective, emotional, psychological, somewhat physical feeling of attraction towards someone of the same sex, and yet they feel uncomfortable with that, and they say, I don't want to be gay. Can you help me to overcome these sexual attractions? Then they're trying to pass a law that would make it illegal to
Right.
provide that child with counseling that would help them to achieve their goal.
Something they want.
Right. And it's and so it's completely contradictory in terms of the logic. It's a logical contradiction, the position taken by the LGBT movement.
Now, according to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association, as many as 98% of gender-confused boys and 88% of gender-confused girls eventually accept their biological sex after they naturally pass through puberty. So, I mean, this is – it's kind of like, you know, when the astronauts, when they come back in the atmosphere, they go through that that kind of that the blackout period where they're just kind of disconnected from everything going on. I think puberty is that way. We just kind of this reentry, you know, we're coming back into the real world and there's a lot of confusion and we feel disconnected. Well, what they're trying to do, these activists are trying to lock those kids into that period forever when we know that most of these kids pass through that and they're fine after that.
That's right. And that's another very important factual point about what the research has shown about transgender children and adolescents is that most of those who exhibit gender nonconforming behavior, let me put it that way, in childhood will not grow up to be transgender adults if left to themselves. Yet I do think we're trying to lock them in. And I've sometimes suggested, with the transgender activists, obviously we have some disagreements, but I would hope that perhaps there could at least be some common ground in saying that even if you believe that someone can change their gender identity from their biological sex, can't we find common ground in saying this is a decision that only should be made by an adult, that children do not have the maturity to make such a life-altering decision?
Do we not have jurisdictions, and there's a push for policies that would allow these children to declare their gender and prohibit the parents from interfering?
Well, yes. This is one of the things that's very troubling, and I mean this is part of would have been part of the guidance was part of the guidance that the Obama administration had issued regarding transgender students in schools, which fortunately the Trump administration has now withdrawn. You had the situation where if a child I told the school that they were transgender and wished to transition, the school had an absolute obligation to respect that decision by the child. But if the child told the school, I do not want my parents to know, my parents are not supportive, the school would also have an absolute obligation under the Obama guidelines to keep that information from the parents. And it would be a violation of the students' rights if the school told the parents, oh, by the way, your child tells us they're transgender. Did you know that?
Incredible.
So there is a shocking level of interference with parental rights as well.
All right, Peter Sprigg, as always, great to talk with you. Thank you for the excellent work that you do.
Thank you, Tony.
Peter Sprigg, senior fellow for policy studies here at the Family Research Council, to find out more. In fact, there's a publication available on this topic, and I believe we have it at the website, tonyperkins.com. If not, we'll have it there. And I encourage you to go and look at it because it has a lot of the information that Peter just laid out right there. And in fact, I'll get the title for you in just a moment, what that publication is. And you can download a free copy at the website, tonyperkins.com. Let me address this. I had some other things I want to talk about, but I feel like I need to talk about this because I actually have had I've had parents and I've had others come and talk to me, you know, in my role as a pastor about what do we do? You know, how should we respond to our children who are having confusion about their sexual identity or they're saying this or that? And I said, look, first and foremost, you love them, okay? What we've seen happen, though, in our culture and all the noise out there is that the term affirmation and love have been conflated as if they were the same thing. You do not have to affirm a child's confusion, a teen's sexual confusion or behavior. You don't have to affirm that to love them. As a parent, we love our children. We unconditionally love them. We don't affirm bad decisions, and it's the way God treats us. God, He loves us, but He doesn't affirm us in our sinful state. You know, Jesus wasn't sent to affirm us. He was sent to save us. And so we cannot confuse love with affirmation. Now, I believe parents should have the right, working with their children, if they're having these issues. And look, many kids have them. I mean, many kids question their sexual identity going through puberty. I mean, there's so many hormones and emotions and feelings. But what's happening that's different than when, you know, I was a teen or you were a teen, many of our listeners, is you don't have these external voices saying, oh, it's okay. Yeah, you're supposed to act on every urge and feeling that you have. No, that's not true. I mean, we all have impulses and urges that are not true. It's what's the part of the fallen nature of man. And God says, no, we're not supposed to act on that. We're supposed to, especially as Christians, and I'm speaking to Christians, okay? I'm just talking to Christians, to Christian parents and families. If you're not a Christian, man, I invite you to be, and you can be, and you can put all the pieces together when you come to know Jesus as your personal Savior and Lord. And doesn't take everything away, but it helps you navigate through these challenging issues of life. Jesus in Matthew 19 laid out pretty clear here when he said, have you not read from the beginning that God created them male and female? Jesus didn't go through and list 52 genders that Facebook has or however many they have now. There was two, male and female. And as a Christian, we have to believe the Word of God as it's definitive, it's true, it's right. And I know even liberal, quote-unquote, and I use quotes, Christians want to say, well, only the words of Jesus matter. You know, the obscure comments of Paul in that book of Romans, that doesn't matter. Okay, well, let's just take the words of Jesus. Jesus was very clear about what marriage was and about gender. And as a parent, we have a responsibility to train up our children the way that they should go. Now, I've had some parents say, well, should I push my kids away? No, absolutely not. We should love our children. I don't care, especially when they're going through these difficulties. That's when they need us. But we don't affirm the choices that they would make that are counter to how God created us. And look, God is not going to, he's not playing games with us in that he says he creates male and female, but then he somehow made us the way we were so that we have feelings that are counter to our biological gender. God didn't do that. I'm not saying you don't have them or that they're not real, but God didn't do that. He didn't make you that way. In fallen nature, and these external forces, and I was a psychology minor, and so there's always this big debate about nurture versus nature, and our nature is fallen, and increasingly the external culture that influences is bad. And of course, you add to that just how we are as human beings. We have to be sanctified, and that is a process. And that doesn't mean Christians don't do bad things or aren't drawn into bad things, but it is a process of walking with the Lord on a daily basis, prayer, Bible study. It is being filled with the Holy Spirit, as Paul talks about. It's a sanctification. It doesn't happen one time. It is a process, and we have to walk with the Lord. We have to teach our children to walk with the Lord. And we don't just, because we feel something, say, oh, that's the way I'm made. I just got to go with it. Not true, folks. And that's the bottom line here, is that these, unfortunately, you're going to continue to see the type of tragedy that we saw with this 13-year-old girl, because that is not how God created us to be. And so there's going to be continual internal conflict, because we're operating in a way that is counter to how God made us. There's help, folks. There is help. And I encourage you to if you're dealing with this in your family, first to pray. Pray, love, pray, and then seek help. You can start with your pastors. Most pastors are not equipped to deal with this, but they can generally point you in the right direction. But increasingly, it's becoming difficult to find the counselors that can provide the help, because these laws are being passed to basically gag counselors. And so oftentimes the only thing left is counseling with churches, with pastors, and who are not really necessarily trained for this. All right, folks, you know what that music means? It means we're out of time. A lot of content today. If you missed anything, go back to TonyPerkins.com and it'll all be archived there later tonight. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed and when you've prepared and you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.